Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the commanding officer of the Naval Operations Support Center here in Minneapolis, and we'll hear about the upcoming Gold Star Family Retreat. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
We observe National Hispanic Heritage Month from September 15th through October 15th each year to celebrate the histories, cultures, and contributions of American citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September 15th is an important date because it marks the anniversary of the independence of five Latin American countries, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Our soldiers and airmen of Hispanic descent contribute daily to the success of our mission. Their unique cultural experiences add value to our organization and our communities. This value has inspired our organization to get involved in local Hispanic community events throughout the year across our state. The Minnesota National Guard continuously seeks the enlistment of soldiers that reflect the communities in which we serve. We strive to promote an environment that truly represents the demographics of the soldiers we lead.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commanding officer of the Naval Operations Support Center from the Joint Reserve Base at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, Captain Brent McMurray. Captain, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Captain, can you tell us a little bit about your military career? I understand you went to the United States Naval Academy.
Well, I did, yes, and actually that was my second choice. I kind of got there by a roundabout way. Born in St. Paul, Minnesota, raised as a farm boy in South Dakota. I was going to be, and I was, registered with pre-med at Iowa. I always wanted to be a neurosurgeon, and that's what I wanted to do all my life. And then this funny movie came on called Top Gun, and that changed everything. And I said, that is exactly what I want to do. So I started applying at the academies and interviewing with my state senator, was fortunate enough to pick up an appointment, and went off to the Naval Academy.
Top Gun.
Yeah, that's...
I remember the movie, Captain.
Many people do.
And once you finished with the Naval Academy, I understand you became a naval aviator down in Pensacola.
Yeah, I chased my dreams and made them a reality. I did fly TAC Air, went to Pensacola, got my wings of gold, moved on from there and flew a myriad of missions with all kinds of aircraft off of aircraft carriers and served around the world for 16 years. And then had a rewarding career there, was an officer in charge of a squadron, participated in four different wars, culminating with actually counter-narcotics operations out of South America for 4 years, kind of a war that people kind of forget about, but a very interesting one nonetheless. And from there, I went on to manage people with the BUPERS and manage and budgeting with the TAC Air program. So I've kind of had a diversified career. It's been great.
So, Captain, is that a normal career path for a pilot? You fly for so many years and then you kind of move over to the admin side of the house?
Well, eventually, if you keep promoting, the big Navy says you need to learn different things. And once you've proven yourself enough in the aviation department, they move you on to either managing manpower or managing budgets, or sometimes both. And both of those are required to continue to climb the corporate ladder, so to speak.
Now, Captain, it must have been a great duty to be able to come home and be stationed here out at the 934th campus.
You know, it's kind of a Cinderella story because, you know, just getting back into the Midwest, it's you're rubbing elbows with the people that you grew up with, and we're kind of cut from a very similar cloth. And who would think that a person from the United States Navy, as far away from saltwater as we probably could get at this point, could serve the active duty U.S. Navy and their reserves right here in the breadbasket of America in Minneapolis.
Well, Captain, that just leads into my next question. What are we doing with the U.S. Naval Reserve Forces here in the Twin Cities?
Well, that's a great question because a lot of people are extremely surprised when I go out and talk to other civic organizations. We actually have a very robust Navy Operational Support Center here. It's a major command consisting of about 700 citizen sailors. They come in. They're obviously people that work in the civilian sector but have specialties in the United States Navy. A lot of them are prior military and have experience, and we leverage those experiences and continue their careers in the reserves. We are located on the 934th campus. We have a building there. We have 21 units. They're diversified in nature. Typically, we have at least 10% of our sailors deployed around the world. We've pulled out of Iraq, but we certainly were there. We're pulling out of Afghanistan, but we still have some remaining as we pull them out. We have sailors actively engaged in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. We have sailors in the Horn of Africa. And if you swing to the Pacific Rim, I have sailors stationed in South Korea as well as in Japan. I remain a presence in Japan, actually a permanent presence, from sailors that are stationed right here in Minneapolis.
We're speaking with Captain Brent McMurray on Minnesota Military Radio. Captain, of your 700 sailors out at the 934th campus, what type of capabilities do you have there? What type of support can you provide for various missions around the world?
Well, it's interesting what we do out there. Like I said, we have 21 units. We have Navy Seabees. We have a contingent of littoral combat ships. In fact, the Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, just announced that one of the ships will be named the Minneapolis-St. Paul. We have a unit there that specializes in that type of ship. We also have medical and dental battalions. We have doctors and nurses that not only support the 700 sailors, but then are deployed around the world supporting the active duty effort. We also have security forces that man the ports and do security operations around the world. And we have a very robust three units that are intelligence units. A lot of them have their eyes in the European theater and what's going on there, and a number of the units and manpower is focused on the Pacific Rim.
So, Captain, you're the U.S. Naval Reserve, so you have a federal mission. And when the Pentagon needs sailors in some kind of mission around the world, do they reach out and see who's available, and is that how the deployments work?
That's exactly right. I know a lot of people are used to thinking that people get deployed, as units or as brigades and as missions. In the reserve world, they pick and choose specific individuals with certain qualifications to augment active duty units. So I routinely field requests from the combatant commanders in the field for certain individuals to come and augment their active duty force. And those deployments are routinely a year long. So you're talking a citizen sailor that has to put his civilian life on hold, his civilian career, his family, needs to kiss him or her goodbye, and off he goes to support the war for a year.
So your naval reservists go one at a time, two at a time, but occasionally you send a unit of like Seabees out somewhere?
That's right. The vast majority go as individuals and come home as individuals. We do have such as a Seabee unit that is part of a commissioned unit, and they go as a unit to support the mission if they're either building something or destroying something in theater.
So, Captain, about how many sailors do you have deployed at any given time, like now?
Well, we typically run 10% at this point as the drawdown. So right around 70 sailors spread throughout the entire globe supporting operations from security forces, intelligence, construction, and shipboard operations.
And Captain, you've got ties back to World War II here with the Minnesota Naval Reserve. I understand we had a number of those reservists on the USS Ward at the opening of World War II.
Yeah, actually, the USS Ward is an extremely interesting event. They were the first ones that shot and sunk a submarine, a Japanese submarine, even just minutes prior to the invasion of Pearl Harbor. They did fire the first shot in World War II in the Pacific. And the interesting thing about the USS Ward is that every sailor on that ship was from Minnesota.
And I think about 4 years ago, we had one of those sailors on the show, and he told the whole story. So for our listeners, if you want to go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and type in the search engine USS Ward, you can hear the whole story of that opening salvo from World War II from Hawaii. Pretty interesting story, Captain.
Outstanding. If you do have an opportunity, also at our Navy Ball, God willing, Mr. Thill, the surviving member here in Minnesota, will be at the Navy Ball as one of our guests of honor.
And he's the gentleman we had on the show, and he told some great stories. He was a pretty young man on that USS Ward back then, Captain.
Yes, he was.
Captain, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by one of your chief petty officers, and we want to talk about there's a Navy Ball coming up. And we're just about out of time for this segment, so when we come back, we'll get into that and show all of the veteran sailors around Minnesota where they can go to experience that. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We're talking with Captain Brent McMurray. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. To Minnesota Military Radio, I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Captain Brent McMurray, the commanding officer of the Naval Operations Support Center at Joint Reserve Base Minneapolis International Airport. And, Captain, I understand the United States Navy has a little birthday coming up.
We do. It's our 240th birthday in the United States Navy, and we're going to go ahead and celebrate that in fine fashion here coming up shortly. And on top of that, this year is extra special because the Navy Reserves is celebrating their centennial, so 100 years of direct Navy Reserve support in support of national emergencies, national contingencies through the United States Navy. So this ball is going to be a very big deal, and we're excited to have it here in Minneapolis.
So you're going to celebrate 100 years or your centennial at the annual Navy Ball, which will be coming up on Saturday, October 17th at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott.
That's right. And that Navy Ball, we've done a lot of planning, and we've gotten a lot of special things coming up. But just a couple plugs. The USO Show Troupe from New York City will be here as our entertainment. That is, if you haven't seen them perform, that's just an A-list performance. I'm very excited for them to be there and to support us, as well as our guest speaker is the Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy for Policy, Ms. Jody Green. She hails from Northfield, Minnesota, so she's coming home, and she's going to be our guest speaker there as well.
And, Captain, you brought with you today one of your chief petty officers, Jessica Mayberry, and she's in charge of the ball. Is that right?
That's right. I gave it to some very capable hands, and Chief Mayberry is the face of the Navy Operational Support Center in supporting the Navy Ball this year.
Chief, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to know that the captain did what captains always do. They put a chief petty officer in charge of an important event. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. This year's event we have arranged at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott. That's on American Boulevard in Bloomington. It's scheduled for Saturday, October 17th is when we'll have the ball. We're planning the event to be arriving around 6 p.m. for like a social hour registration time period, and then the program will actually start about 7 o'clock in the evening.
Now, Chief, that's an annual event that happens here in the Twin Cities?
It is, and actually the Navy League here in Minnesota is very strong. They are involved in dealing with the ball every year. And so being that this is the Navy Reserve Centennial, we've stepped in to do a lot of the arrangements just because we really wanted to get involved with this year's being it's such a special year for our reserve community.
And we've had Brian Scott on the show, and most recently we had him on when he helped us with to cover the commissioning of the USS Minnesota. And the Navy League here in Minnesota provided a lot of support for that commissioning and a lot of support for the sailors that served on that submarine. So if you're working with Brian, you've got a good partner there, don't you?
Yes, he's fantastic.
So who comes to this annual Navy Ball? Is it just the reserve sailors? Is it the Navy League people, or is it open to the public?
Sure. There's a lot of different organizations that are involved with making this happen. So obviously, NOSC sailors will be in attendance. The Navy ROTC program at the University of Minnesota will be in attendance as well. We will have some members from the USS Minnesota present. NRD Minneapolis, the Navy recruiting district right here in Minneapolis, also plays a huge role. And then we also have our Navy Sea Cadets, which are actually high school age students who are involved with a Sea Cadet program where they learn what the Navy is all about at that level. And they're actually serving as our color guard this year for the ball.
So you said that this is going to happen on Saturday, October 17th at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott. Can you tell us the times and the schedule, what's going to happen that day?
Sure. So like I said, arrival will be at 6 p.m. for just the registration and like a social hour. Our program will begin at 7 p.m. And that'll start, we'll start do a kickoff, and then dinner will be at about 7:15. We'll have the guest speaker. Our USO show troop will do their performance, as well as in Navy Heritage, we have a lot of ceremonial things that we provide. We do a POW table and a presentation of what that prisoner of war table is all about. And so there's a lot of different entities that are all part of that program. And then, of course, all of that will be followed up by dancing at the end.
We're speaking with Captain Brent McMurray and Chief Petty Officer Jessica Mayberry on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Chief, I've seen that USO show. I think that's the same one we saw at the commissioning for the USS Minnesota. They do a marvelous job. Those ladies can really sing. They can really belt it out. And if anybody likes that music from back towards World War II, those type of things, it's some great stuff. Have you seen that, Chief?
I have not personally seen the show, but I've heard it's fantastic as well.
All right. Now, if there are any retired sailors around Minnesota, are they invited to come to this ball?
Absolutely. So what the Navy League has done is they've created a website, so they can just go to www.navyballmn.org, and right from there you can see all of the information that we've covered on the show today, as well as you can purchase your tickets right online there.
So for information on that, for all you retired sailors out there in Minnesota, out in Minnesota Military Radio land, navyballmn.org. That's coming up on Saturday, October 17th at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott, so you've got plenty of time to sign up and come on down there. And Chief, what's the dress for that night?
The dress for the evening is going to be, obviously, we'd like for as many military members to be in a service dress uniform with ribbons. However, we have opened it up to be a business dress for that evening. So that we can allow for max participation and get as many people there as possible.
So for us civilians, business suit will work. And
perfect.
And the captain will be all decked out in his flight suit, I imagine.
Yeah, I wish. Flight suits are not authorized at this event. That's a black tie affair. I'll get my mess dress on. My wife enjoys that.
All right. So you're going to get all cleaned up and get ready for this big event, Captain.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss it. Another side story there is we've designed a command coin, a challenge coin, if those are out there that are familiar with that, and it's specific for the Navy ball, and with the centennial, it has a specific emblem on it. So every person that comes will obviously be going away with a token of remembrance for that great night they're going to have.
And Chief, how many people were at this last year, do you know?
Last year, I think there was a little over 200 in attendance. What we're looking for this year is we're planning around 300 to 500. So we'd really like to see as many people there together to celebrate this really special year.
Well, hopefully we've got a lot of sailors out there listening to the show and we can get you up to 400 or 500, Chief. We're going to work you out that night.
That sounds great. I love it.
Captain smiling, saying, yeah, let's get this done.
Absolutely.
Captain, for our listeners out there, you were a naval aviator. Are you done flying?
I believe I am. It's time to do something else. I've hung up those spurs. I had a great time. I lived the dream, but I'm looking forward to other challenges.
So I turned the page on Top Gun, and now you're ready for the military ball.
Yes, it's going to be a great event, and it's we got a great speaker with the Deputy Undersecretary. We have a great entertainment lined up, and then we have dancing for those that love to go out there and show everybody else how to go and dance. So I think everybody will have a great time. There's something there for everybody.
So information on that, once again, is at navyballmn.org. And Chief, are you gonna give dancing lessons before that happens?
I don't know if anybody wants dancing lessons for me, but I will be there.
All right, Chief. We just got about a minute left. Can you run through the times again and what's going to happen?
Sure, absolutely. So again, October 17th at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott. We'll show up for social hour at 6 o'clock with a presentation beginning at 7 o'clock.
Thank you, Chief. And Captain, about a minute left. The Naval Reserve here in Minnesota, are you still looking for a few young sailors?
Always. Well, the United States Navy Reserve is always looking for people that have talent, that want to serve their nation and answer a higher call. We can certainly go out there and canvass those people, but if you're listening and you're remotely interested and you're wondering if you can fill the need for your nation, I would certainly recommend going to a recruiter. You can find them almost anywhere around the Twin Cities here or online. And see what opportunities are out there. Who would know a kid from the South Dakota cornfields would have gone out and saw the world and flew off aircraft carriers for 16 years? Again, the possibilities are endless.
And come home as a captain and run 700 sailors out of the Naval Operations Support Center at the Joint Reserve Base in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Good work, Captain.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I hope you've wrote down all the pertinent information. Go to the website, please, the Navy Ball. We'd love to see you. It's fun to break bread with future, past, and present sailors.
So one last time, if you want information on that, it's October 17th, a Saturday at the Minneapolis Airport Marriott, and go to NavyBallMN.org. Captain, Chief, thanks for joining me today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Our pleasure.
That was Captain Brent McMurray, Commanding Officer of the Naval Operations Support Center here in Minneapolis, and Chief Petty Officer Jessica Mayberry on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We're going to hear from our all about the Gold Star Family Retreat when we come back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll meet a couple of Gold Star families. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
With fall and school in full swing, have you thought about educational benefits that may be available to you if you have served? Have you served honorably, are a Minnesota resident, and are interested in higher education? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be eligible for education assistance through the Minnesota GI Bill program. Minnesota veterans, non-veterans who served in the military, and eligible spouses and children who are full-time undergraduate or graduate students or part-time students may be eligible. The whole purpose of this bill is to get Minnesotans, and especially Minnesota veterans, back to work. The plan starts with education, and the first step is financial assistance to help you get there. The bill is also making it easier for those who have served to get assistance they need. For full eligibility requirements, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Last October, we were invited to attend the 7th Annual Gold Star Family Retreat in Brainerd, Minnesota, which was sponsored by the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The purpose of the retreat was to bring the families who have lost a loved one to military service together for a weekend to provide a comfortable environment conducive to relaxation and share the stories of loved ones who have passed. While we were there, many of the families volunteered to tell their story in order to share with us who they were, how they died, and to help remember them. If you visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and look up the July 4th show or type in Gold Star, you can listen to many of the stories, and we'll now share two more of them with you on today's show. Joining me now from the Gold Star Family Retreat at Craigens Resort on Gull Lake is Paul Selge, the Gold Star father of Staff Sergeant Todd Selge. Paul, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
It's really great to be here. Thank you.
Paul, we were talking over the weekend a little bit. Your family's got a long history of serving the military in the United States. Can you share that with us?
Yes, I can. My grandfather actually came to the United States 100 years ago this August. And as it turns out, he was a member of the German Navy. And when World War I began, they were in port in Boston, and the American government came and interred their ship, so he was sort of under house arrest on his ship until April of 1914, in which time the United States entered the war, and they became combatants. So they marched Marines on the ship and carted my grandfather off to a prisoner of war camp in Michigan, and he met a Dutch girl from Chicago, and at the end of the war, they gave him an opportunity either to repatriate back to Germany or stay in the United States, and he stayed in the United States, and that basically started our military history in the United States, him being a prisoner of war. He had three boys, and in World War II, all three of them served in the military. My father was in the Navy during World War II. He was a naval officer and served on landing craft in the Pacific, went through the entire Pacific War. Obviously made it back or I wouldn't be here. My Uncle Marvin was in the Army, and he was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge in Europe. And my other uncle, Charlie, he was in the Army Air Corps, and he flew the Burma Hump in Burma during the war and retired as a lieutenant colonel from the United States Air Force. After that, of course, I was born, and I went to West Point in 1966, graduated in 1970, a little late for getting into active service in Vietnam, but I was in Thailand in a logistical role, and I was there when Saigon fell and Phnom Penh fell, so that was a pretty momentous time for us. We weren't sure whether the enemy armies were going to continue on marching into Thailand or not, and I had the opportunity to be the last officer, American officer, on Karat Air Force Base and turn that base over to the Thai government in 1974. That was the extent of my military career, so to speak. But my son, Todd, then, was in high school during 9/11, and he was involved in an incident at school on 9/12. The next day, he dressed up as Captain America, put a flag around his neck, and was kind of rabble-rousing for the United States and the Army and the American effort, if you will. And he was told that he was going to be kicked out of school if he didn't stop rabble-rousing, and he'd take the flag off, so he did. And then at lunchtime, he went out to the school parking lot, put the flag back on, and continued his rabble-rousing. Got caught by the assistant principal, and of course was relieved from school for a couple of days. But he was completely gung-ho about the United States and our cause, and he knew he was going to go into the Army. He did go to Normandale College for 1 year in order to get enough credits in order to go into the Army in basic training as a PFC. They had a stripes for credit program, and he was gung-ho Army all the way, served two tours in Iraq, wounded in his first tour. He also, unfortunately, the incident of his demise was on his first combat tour of his second tour in Iraq, went back to the same area in Bakuba on that first first mission that they went out. They were maneuvering in night operations under night conditions, in blackout conditions, actually, and his striker went off a 60-foot bridge across the Bakuba River, the main bridge across the Bakuba River, and he and another soldier, Jordan Shea, were killed in that fall, and the other people in that striker, all of them except one, were actually injured badly enough that they had to end their careers in the military. So that basically, you know, was the situation. My son got out of recruiting duty. He was on orders to go recruiting duty, but he actually fought to get out of that in order to go back to Iraq on that second tour because he believed in the Brotherhood of Arms, and he did not want his men to go to Iraq in a combat situation without him being able there to provide some experience from his first tour of duty. So I have to say that I'm just completely proud of him. He wrote an article in the Army Times that was published, and it was about what do American soldiers want. And he wrote this as a, I believe he was a Specialist 4, which is relatively a junior grade, if you will. And basically he said that the American soldier wants to provide the opportunity for the Iraqi people to be able to live in the same type of lifestyle that the United States people live in. And that the soldiers wanted to see that and accomplish that mission and then come home. And I just can't be more proud of his attitude. And I just feel very lucky that I was the father of a kid that was, as far as I'm concerned, much greater than me or anybody else in my family.
Paul, long history in your family of serving in the military in the United States. Thank God your grandfather didn't go back to Germany. He might have been on the other side of that war in World War II. You've been up to these Gold Star family retreats. Do you find them beneficial?
Yeah, I really do. Coming from a military background, I fully accepted the fact that men are going to die in war, and that my son could have been, I mean, before he went, I knew that he could have been a casualty, and I knew that my son was no more special than any of the other soldiers that went over, and somebody was going to die. So I wasn't, theologically upset that my son died, But I was extremely proud that he did what he did. And my wife has taken it very hard. And the thing about these Gold Star retreats is it's given my wife an opportunity to meet with other wives and other mothers. And she sees their pain. She's obviously in a lot of pain. And it's really helped the family. My son and my daughter have come, and they've met with other siblings of other lost soldiers, and it's just an opportunity for them to realize that they're not in this by themselves. I'm surprised at the number of Minnesota boys that have shown up on the casualty list, and I just am in awe at the families and just the camaraderie that the people that attend these meetings show. And I'm just, I suppose I really wouldn't want to have to come to these meetings, but I am kind of glad that since I did lose my son, that I was had this opportunity. And I just wish that other families in other states that don't have these programs could be able to experience what we've experienced over the last 5 years here.
Paul, thank you for joining us today and sharing the story of your long family history and the story of your son.
Thank you.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back with another interview with a Gold Star family. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been listening to some interviews from the 7th Annual Gold Star Family Retreat in Brainerd, and we're going to get to another one in a moment. But first, I'd like to point out that the 8th Annual Gold Star Family Retreat will be held at Craigans on Gull Lake, October 2 through the 4th. It's a remarkable gathering of Gold Star families and a time of remembrance and healing. If you'd like to attend or learn more about it, please call 612-970-5662. That's 612-970-5662. And now let's get to our next interview. Joining me now is Connie Scott, Gold Star mother of PFC Brian Williams, at the Gold Star Family Retreat at Craigans Resort and Gull Lake. Connie, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Connie, I'd like to start by talking a little bit about your son and what happened, and then talk about how we can help other families deal with this issue and this loss. Can you tell us a little bit about your son?
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about my son, PFC Brian Williams. He was youngest of four kids. He enlisted in the Army, did his basic training, ended up at Fort Carson, Colorado, and almost immediately was sent to Ramadi, Iraq. He served in a combat outpost. His training was in repair of special electronic devices, night goggle visions, and things of that nature. He was in Iraq for a short period of time, came home on leave, and died by suicide the day before he was supposed to return to Iraq.
Connie, how old was your son?
He was 20 when he died.
Do you think he was old enough to know what he was getting into and what he was dealing with, going into a war zone and having to deal with everything he saw and did and experienced?
Brian loved his country, and he wanted to do something to serve. He wanted to do something to make his family proud of him. In my personal opinion, as his mother, I don't think he was the right personality to be able to witness the trauma of war at his age. And I think it was more difficult for him emotionally than what he expected. He did want to follow his older brother's footsteps, who also served in the military. And he just wanted to do something for his country.
Connie, it has to be an unthinkable and undescribable loss to lose your son at that age. What type of resources were available for you back in 2006 to deal with what had happened?
I was not initially aware of services. I was pretty much in shock for the first about 5 months. I happened to come across a packet that somebody had handed me during the time we were planning the funeral that I hadn't even looked at, and it was a packet from TAPS, and it had various resources in it, Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, and I got involved with them initially. I became a mentor for other mothers who had lost sons to suicide, and from there things just kind of snowballed. We eventually got involved with the Gold Star Family Retreat and have come every year since Brian has died.
And have you found that a valuable experience?
It's amazing the value that we get out of this, and I hope that everyone understands that this is an ongoing need for the families. Every year our grief is a little bit different, and every year we come we learn new tools, new approaches, different ways to face the challenges of our grief that changes. It doesn't go away. We will always carry the grief that we have for the rest of our lives, but we're in different stages every year, and we need different types of help. When we come here, this is the one place we can come every year and let our guard down and be who we are, because every one of us understands that one minute we might cry, one minute we might laugh, and either way is okay here.
Connie, at the first night of this event, I listened to the stories from, it must have been at least 50 families that talked about how they'd lost their loved ones, some to accidents, some to heat, some to friendly fire, some to RPGs, but there must have been at least 8 or 10 that were a result of post-traumatic stress and took their own life, suicide. Do you interact with those folks, and are you in a position now, after 8 years, that you're helping them?
I am always available and willing to talk to any person, military or civilian, that has endured the loss of a loved one to suicide. The first 5 years, I was active in about 12 different organizations at once promoting. I took training to be a support group facilitator. I led a support group. I've done public speaking. I've done lobbying on Capitol Hill with our senators, congressmen. I have traveled across the country and done family panels. I've taken the last couple years off, but if there is ever a place that I am needed or wanted, I would step right back in.
Connie, like a lot of things in life, sometimes by helping others and by teaching how to deal with things, you end up sorting out some of the issues for yourself. Has that been the case for you?
Oh, absolutely. And, it's not a surprise that, the best way to help yourself is by helping someone else. And immense value in peer support. I think that's probably the single most important resource we have, is by getting together with other people who share your experience and find out how they handle things, what works for them, what doesn't work. Professional help is always great, but someone who's read about something in a book may not always have the best practical advice for you.
Connie, for our listeners out there that might be Gold Star families that have never attended, what would you tell them about the Gold Star Family Retreat?
I am a big recruiter for the event. It's very scary to come the first time. You don't know what to expect. You're afraid it's going to be emotional. Well, it is emotional, but it's emotional in a very healing way. You walk away from here with a great love for the people that are around you. We are family here, and we are so fortunate in the state of Minnesota that we have the most strong support group for our Gold Star families.
Connie, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for letting me be here.
This is Connie Scott, Gold Star mother of PFC Brian Williams, at the Gold Star Family Retreat at Craigens Resort on Gull Lake.
Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Well, great to speak with you again, Tom, and absolutely my pleasure to be with you.
Sergeant Major, every few weeks we have you on, but in between we have on the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and I understand you recently spoke to them.
Yes, I did. They just completed their annual conference up at Grandview Lodge in Nisswa, and I had the opportunity to address all of the veteran service officers. And, I just wanted to give them a brief one-on-one of the National Guard, because they do work with a lot of our National Guard soldiers and airmen. But one message I absolutely want to make sure that your listening audience understands is that these veterans service officers are there to support them. And if there's any doubt about whether or not one of our veterans out there listening can get the help or the resources or the needs that they have, they need to contact their VSO, because that person will provide them resources, and we want to make sure all our veterans are taken care of.
County Veteran Service Officer, there's at least one in every county, and they usually hang out somewhere around the courthouse, and they know all the resources available, so once again, get to know them.
Absolutely right. And the thing is, maybe a lot of people don't know this, is all of our county veteran service officers are veterans. So that's a big plus. You're walking in and you instantly have a relationship with someone because they've served as well.
Sergeant Major, a while back we did a special show for a big production that the Minnesota National Guard had called Hockey Day Minnesota. And I understand something good happened from that.
Yeah, so it was a fantastic day, as you know. I was over with the Adjutant General to visit Kuwait in our 34th Cab during Hockey Day Minnesota. And that event, that production, was put together and submitted for an Emmy. And proud to announce that the program that was put together and submitted has earned the Board of Governors Emmy. And this will be the fifth Emmy that the Minnesota National Guard has been awarded. So we've got just a fantastic public affairs group. They do a great they do great work for us. And obviously that particular event, teaming up with all of the organizations, you know, Fox Sports North and serving our troops. I mean, it was just a great day, and proud to announce that we won an Emmy for that. And well, speaking of hockey, this weekend I'm participating in the Minnesota Armed Forces Hockey Tournament up in Blaine at the Schwann Super Rink. So you'll have to wish me luck. It'll be the first time I'm on skates in probably about 6 months. So hopefully I won't embarrass myself too much, but I know we're going to have a lot of fun out there.
Sergeant Major, get out those pads and gloves and helmet.
I will, and I was told, I was given very specific instructions, I can't drop the gloves. And, of course, I wouldn't do that anyway, but it's always good to have a little fun, and always a great time to get a group of service members together, have some fun on the ice, and, you know what, just play around a little bit, get some good exercise.
Be careful out there, Sergeant Major. I want to go back to that Hockey Day Minnesota for a minute. I saw the opening video that your PAO people put together, and it was one where I think Colonel Thingvold found a hockey puck out in the desert. And they showed it, him taking it to one of his pilots and taking off with it, and then ended up with one of the Blackhawks landed over in St. Paul, and here the hockey puck made all the way back here to open up Hockey Day Minnesota. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. That was a synchronized puck drop, and, you know, just another one of those great things that the team is able to put together, a way to tie home back to our soldiers that are deployed forward. And I just can't say enough good things about how Hockey Day Minnesota went and the great work that the whole team put together and did.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom, thanks so much. I look forward to talking in the future. I hope you have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Captain Brent McMurray, Chief Petty Officer Jessica Mayberry, Paul Selge, Connie Scott, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we meet the Minnesota Disabled American Veteran Commander and learn what Folds of Honor is all about. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.